bit on this kind of impossibility of dealing with the idea, I suppose, of anarchic management or managed anarchy. Something has gone wrong with our...
This one works. It works this side, works fine. Come over here.
Okay, all right.
It's some of the anarchic management at work.
It's anarchic management. I think Roger Madeline was talking about his consultants at that point rather than the project on site. Well, it's difficult, I know. I mean, we only had 15 minutes to explain things, and it's easy to get defensive about things you think you're doing but have been misunderstood. Probably the biggest one that seems misunderstood is the issue of that it's private, and there's a sort of Islingtonization going on. And I, if you think about the area of Islington it's next to, it's far from the nice part, and that it's very far from being a private organisation. And as far as getting involved in the local community, which I just am amazed at the energy of Roger Madeline personally, how he's devoted so much time. I know of no other property developer in the world who is working as hard as he is in order to actually understand the truth of this site. But probably the sort of biggest thing I feel is missing in a way is actually that although there is the big issue of transport and how it affects such master plans, I sort of take the view that King's Cross St. Pancras is a bit like a comet with a tail, and that everybody focuses on the comet, but actually the real thing that's happening is in the tail. And that you could say that the development is happening despite King's Cross rather than because of it. And I think there's a lot of truth in that. And I think it's very interesting, everything that's been said. I feel completely confident that we've got it right. And I look forward to the next 15 years.
Could I perhaps bring in Mayor Williams of Washington for a perspective on how things would be done differently or similarly in D.C.?
I think on a couple levels. One level is we would, and I'm not sure whether this has been really discussed, is how do the impacts of this relate to one another in terms of the different nodes of transport? So if you're doing one thing here, how is this relating to the other destinations? Right, there are other stations in the city. So if you're changing flows here, is this relating, how is this changing the other stations and therefore changing those communities in terms of impacts? Very, very, very big sensitivity in my city now is this whole notion of community participation. And I would take some exception with the professor yesterday in that in my city, for example, on Saturday, we're going to be having the fourth citizen summit where we have 4,000 citizens, business people, poor people, everybody, young, old, all come to this convention center, and they actually spend 8 hours talking about a strategic vision and comprehensive plan for the city, believe it or not. And they're all involved, and I actually take this plan, or I've tried to take this plan, and actually govern the city based on the plan. So a big question for us would be, how is this, we're kind of plan conscious, how is this fitting into this overall conception of the city? Which is obviously at odds with the notion that I think most people would embrace of the city of anarchy. I mean, you know, that's kind of the life of a city. So there's that tension going on. So those are two big things we would be looking at.
I get a sense that we're taking two things away with us from this morning. One is a kind of unanswered question about whether transport is in the driving seat. Did I really say that? in that we are using transport as the primary generator of how cities are shaped, as Geetam showed with this very powerful image of the analogy of the elevator as a mass transit system. And I remember Norman Foster producing a scheme for a kilometer-high building as a prototype study for a Japanese construction company, which he literally called the elevator systems, which are, of course, four deckers, as a vertical mass transit system, which is a provocative idea and gives us a kind of question about whether we actually organize our cities around these systems or whether we use them as a much less directional activity. And the other kind of set of questions, I suppose, is this one about whether development necessarily kills the things that we love about cities. I remember when Covent Garden was actually first unveiled by something called the Greater London Council, which was behind it. There was even then a sense that this must not become another festival market, that there were very tightly drafted rules about what you could and what you couldn't sell in the shops in Covent Garden, that you couldn't sell denim, you couldn't sell cheesecloth, you couldn't use certain signage systems. And of course, we all know what happened to that attempt to kind of create that sense of diversity that we love about cities. Is it perhaps inevitable that the cityness quality that we look for is always temporary, always transient, and always tending to move somewhere else? And I suppose that, if that were the case, then I suppose that it's the job of the developer to try to build in some system where gentrification is not irreversible, that there is a possibility of life after that moment. I wonder if Richard Sennett could perhaps close this session with a few thoughts about why he was so keen on that anarchic image.
Well, I just want to raise, if we look at this image again, a question, which maybe translates some of the worry, Bob, that Nigel and others have about this scheme. This is a pigeon's eye view of a project. If you imagine yourself on the ground in the center of that project, where are you? I think the issue that's being raised to you is that because of the decision of this mid-size scale and almost its uniformity, and the fact that this is a visual project essentially understood in plan or in a perspective that's that of a flying bird, that it's very hard to imagine. Just imagine yourself right in the center of that project on the ground. How are you orientated to London? Where are you? And I think that's the visual translation of at least the discussion that has to happen about whether this kind of planning is good for the center of a city.
Graham, would you like to?
Well,
this is a friendly comment.
Yes, and so is this. of course, I wholeheartedly disagree with that, because if you took a bird's eye view of any other part of London, you could step back, and the fact that all of these buildings are white because they're just a computer model is the way it is. But I think what we're interested in is the nature of normality. And normality is a framework for change, and that any good master plan should be capable of being rebuilt over a 100-year period, say, and that it's not dependent on the architecture at all. So there's a great danger that one is looking at the architecture, although I don't think you're doing that, to be fair. But I do think that in terms of where are you, which is that very pointed question you asked, anywhere on this site, you are one block away from a space that's unique and distinct, that leads to another, that leads to another. That there's a completely legible series of lanes, streets, spaces, squares that all lead to a confluence of activity. Now, the one thing about London that you don't get, that we really enjoy, is first of all, that you don't have to, in a neoclassical sense, reveal everything. It doesn't, the boulevard or you know, it, it very rarely happens in London, that in fact all you need to know is at the end of the street there's something that you understand and recognise. And the second thing, and the real danger with master planning, and in a way could be a response to your comment, is that you sort of step the other way and you go for a major geometric gesture or move, you know, so a great spiral on the plan. And I really believe that urban planning is understanding the way people live, the way cities actually work, the relationship of hierarchies and making them legible. So I actually look at that image and I know exactly where I'd be. And I think if you're on the ground, you would too.
And as a member of a kind of flying circus, which has taken this theme of urban age from New York to Shanghai to London, sometimes I also ask myself, where are we? Tony Travers, perhaps you'd like to answer that question very, very quickly to close this session before we go for coffee.
Well, I just wanted to make the point that we heard from Gerald Frug yesterday about the move from government to governance. What's interesting is that the architects and the developers and master planners on this site are undoubtedly working within a framework for a new London, which London's government, the elected leader, the mayor, through the London plan, want London to look more like this new thing and less like the stuff that surrounds it. And therefore, this thing looks alien because of government. It looks very big and very dense and not like the tree-lined chaos beyond it, because this is what London government is beginning to want new developments to look like. So it is just, you know, all the stuff about density, building near transport nodes, paying for affordable housing by ramping up the amount of development on a site is what we the people have asked through our mayor to have done here.
And now for some coffee. And we are running a bit late. So if we... if we could try and be back by 11 o'clock so we can...